Welcome to China in Context. I'm Duncan Bartlett. People in Hong Kong are obliged to follow strict rules on their way of life, similar to those imposed on citizens in mainland China. In the past, the city enjoyed a great deal of political autonomy. But things changed when Beijing pushed through stringent security laws following massive anti-government protests in 2019. China says this saved the city from chaos. However, people in Hong Kong tell me that they're particularly concerned about the way in which the concept of endangering national security has come to be applied to a wide range of situations. Well, I'm joined on this week's podcast by a guest who lived in Hong Kong for many years and who is noted for his strong opinions about the city. Michael C. Davis is a global fellow with the Wilson Center's Asia Program, and he's recently written a book entitled Freedom Undone: The Assault on Liberal Values and Institutions in Hong Kong. Michael, welcome to China in Context.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with the security law or laws, which have already been introduced in Hong Kong. They've led to the arrest of journalists, businessmen, even lawyers. I read somewhere, actually, that when people are put on trial, there is a 100% conviction rate. Explain to us what you think is going on.
In the past, when I talked about Hong Kong, it was in a context of an open society, and the question would be whether, you know, they're adhering to the highest standards in that regard. What has happened now is, I think, a dramatic transformation of Hong Kong. I have just actually seen their latest effort, the Article 23 bill that's being presented by the government in LegCo, 212 pages of national security. A consultation document over that, again, essentially embracing Chinese mainland version of national security. So what I think is going on in Hong Kong, and I emphasize this in the book you mentioned, is a dramatic transformation of the city from what was a liberal constitutional order with freedoms and human rights, and actually ranked among the highest in the world, to a kind of national security state, where national security takes precedence over everything else in society. It's almost stunning that a little city of this size has such extensive laws or to cover national security. The government's even bragging that it has 100% conviction rate. And I think you have to then understand this new national security model I'm describing isn't just a bunch of stuff on paper. The rule of law as it used to function is now under pressure. And the result is this very high conviction rate and a lot of prosecutions that would not have taken place in the past.
I hear that the authorities in Hong Kong often use similar tactics to those used in mainland China against dissidents and others, including televised confessions and forced repentance letters.
It's kind of a long list of things that have been happening that again, paint this vision now of Hong Kong as copying the mainland national security model. One was the very widely reported case of a young woman who I actually had in a panel years ago in a university, a young woman who was taken on mainland brainwashing trips. This is Agnes Chow, is her name. And she was then only allowed to leave Hong Kong with a commitment that she would come back and report to the police. And when she got away, she said she wasn't coming back. But she was taken on a kind of trip to meet mainland people by the Hong Kong police. Other cases have involved withholding passports of people or bargaining with them. In fact, Agnes Chow had that same experience, bargaining over whether she would get that passport to leave to pursue some studies that she planned in Canada. And that other cases have involved very common thing on the mainland that when you're sort of in the police's target, that your family members get harassed. So a lot of Hong Kongers who have fled find that their families are brought down to the police stations and interrogated. And then finally, I would end this little list by noting the pressure on lawyers, which is also common on the mainland. And that lawyers who were trying to provide legal aid during the 2019 protest were targeted by the Hong Kong government, and they were reported to their bar association and law societies over their work involving a certain fund that was set up to help protesters.
Now, Hong Kong's leader or chief executive, John Lee, says that more legislation will be introduced in 2024. The goal appears to be particularly to tighten laws on espionage, treason, and other foreign political activities. There's been a public consultation on these laws to some extent, but they're then put before the LegCo, and they're likely to actually to be introduced in the spring in Hong Kong. What do you think are the implications of this additional set of laws?
Well, first, the consultation document made this very clear. The first couple chapters of this document actually cites at length the mainland approach to national security, which is called a comprehensive national security concept. And this is sometimes referred to as a holistic approach. In this consultation document, the government quotes exactly that and says that Hong Kong is now going to adopt the same comprehensive approach, this holistic approach. And the mainland approach is kind of geared mostly towards protecting the Communist Party from Chinese people. And so it involves like 20 some categories of areas where national security risks are high. And most of these involve whether the people will object. You know, the mainland officials have read the political economy literature, and they know that when people's economic development reaches a certain level, they may push against the government, an authoritarian government, or try to overthrow it. So this is kind of the design of the mainland system, that Hong Kong now is going to approach national security very much the way it's done on the mainland. And they make this clear. They don't hedge about it. They say that's what they're doing, but the details suggest that they're going to be very aggressive in enforcing national security on state secrets. So it's a problem for the press. It's a problem for academic researchers and so on. And finally, in the consultation and in this document, they spend a lot of time talking about foreign interference of various types. So they're clearly trying to find ways to punish foreign governments or anybody who testifies, say, in foreign parliaments and so on. They want to put pressure on them not to do so, because if they do so, they will be involved in some kind of a collusion.
Let's talk about a slightly different but related subject now. Tell us about the media mogul Jimmy Lai. Why is he such a significant figure in terms of Hong Kong and international politics?
He was a very poor man, young man, who came over, like many did years ago, to Hong Kong and worked in factories and eventually worked his way up and created a clothing empire. And then that was called Giordano, and it was put under mainland Chinese pressure because of his political activity. So that company, he sold it off. But then he had created a newspaper called the Apple Daily. And the Apple Daily newspaper became one of the leading newspapers in Hong Kong in Chinese. And Jimmy Lai has a, in the Apple Daily, in effect, he supported the opposition in Hong Kong. Well, when the national security law was imposed, the government decided they were going to shut Jimmy Lai down. He had become kind of a thorn in the side of the mainland government. And so the way to shut him down is to arrest him and charge him with violations under the national security law. And he was arrested and perp walked actually through his newspaper while his reporters were taking photos and so on. And so he was arrested, and now he's put on trial. And the trial's going on forever, showing that Jimmy Lai was out to criticize the government's policies in various ways, what most of us would think of as editorial freedom.
Well, let's talk about the international reaction to Mr. Lai's trial. He had a great deal of attention, actually. The European Parliament passed a resolution calling for his release. United Nations experts have expressed grave concerns over his detention. And here in the UK, the government says that Jimmy Lai's case is a priority, and they've raised the issue on multiple occasions with the Chinese government. Has any of that international pressure had an impact on China?
Well, it's not in a way you would like that they would reconsider their behavior, But I think we have to understand when we talk about human rights advocacy, that it's rare that a regime is just going to cave in when you criticize. The Beijing's reputation is harmed, and the Hong Kong government's reputation, because it's on the front line of this, is severely harmed by this prosecution. So the crackdown then takes on a personal kind of character that people around the world can understand, even if they don't know all the moving parts. And so this kind of pressure from foreign governments serves that purpose. And Beijing, of course, wants to have soft power, wants to expand its role in the world and so on, and win support. So I think human rights people kind of don't quit just because the regime doesn't do what you want.
Let's turn to economic issues. I noticed that the rate of growth in Hong Kong has slowed more sharply than in the rest of China, where there has been a slowdown as well. Why do you think that is?
The government in Hong Kong has blamed this only on COVID and world economic trends. But Hong Kong tends to float up and down with the United States because its currency is tied to the United States. And the United States economy is doing gangbusters right now. It's very strong. And so, contrary to that kind of expectation that this link creates with the US economy, Hong Kong is not doing well. And I put that right at all of these political problems they're creating for themselves in imposing national security laws and so on, that Hong Kong's value to the world was historically based on a very strong rule of law and protection of basic rights and freedoms. And the loss of that is so strikingly apparent right now. And the silence, even in the face of these new Article 23 proposals, is an indication that people feel they have no freedom at all. So this is the problem. It has a huge public relations problem, and I think this has an impact on the economy.
Now, I'd like to ask you about a Chinese Communist Party official called Zhai Baolong. He's the director of the Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office. Why was he appointed to that job, and what's his role?
His appointment, obviously, is Beijing feels that he will maintain their hard line on Hong Kong that's ongoing right now and push through all of these things. And so they create an impression even that all people of Hong Kong want this national security law. It's the sort of mainland version of how they control the media and how they control what they claim the public opinion is. So that's what he does. And he's the top guy in Beijing's government on Hong Kong. And so he comes to Hong Kong much like the prime minister might have come from Britain in the past to Hong Kong to visit. And he has these official visits, and he gathers around him all of these officials and members of the Beijing pro-Beijing camp. And they put on a big show about public support and so on, and that they're sensitive to the public. But at the end of the day, his job is to oversee this national security agenda, the emphasis on pushing through now this new so-called Article 23 legislation, which I mentioned a moment ago.
Well, I'd like to finish by reading a statement from Hong Kong's chief executive, John Lee. He said, and I'll read it, "Beijing firmly supports the Hong Kong government in protecting the rights and freedoms of speech, press, publication, association, assembly, procession, and demonstration in accordance with the relevant provisions of the Basic Law." That's an interesting phrase. What do you make of it?
Well, that's their line that they're doing that. They even stuck Beijing stuck that in the national Article 4 of the national security law they imposed, that they're adhering to all of these things, but we've seen little evidence of it. It's just I guess part of the public relations drive to convince the world that Hong Kong is open for business as usual.
Well, Michael, thank you very much. You've covered a wide range of topics there, and it's all been fascinating. That was Michael C. Davis from the Wilson Center's Asia program, and his recently published book is called Freedom Undone: The Assault on Liberal Values and Institutions in Hong Kong. This podcast is produced by the SOAS China Institute, part of the University of London, and you can find out more about our courses and research at soas.ac.uk. But for now, that's all from us here at the China in Context podcast team.